All right. Because of there are about six different start times that are out there, so we are glad you are here. What we are going to do is our committee meeting. We're going to jump right in, and Councilor Reed, your spot is right here. So in the paper, it said that the public meeting started at 6. So there may be the general public, some more members of the general public that shows up at 6. We are going to proceed with the committee meeting. We're going to start off, and I'll just let Bob explain. We're going to jump right into the proposed actions, but I'll let him take care of that. So, thank you. I think we have the majority of the Planning Commission here. If not all, maybe. And so, this is, if you read the Kaiser Times article, we agree with that. It's incredibly important. It's not the most glamorous. It's not the most, whatever. But this is an important decision that Kaiser is going to have to deal with. And it's going to affect how Kaiser moves forward from here on. So, without any further, I guess we need to. Our chair is here.
No, our vice chair.
Our vice chair is here. Great.
Nick.
That's me.
Uh-huh. You're going to have to lead it.
It's a surprise woman.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to have to do anything. I'm the vice.
Yeah, that was anyway, so basically we just need to approve the minutes and turn the time over to Mr. Parker, and we're going to jump right on it.
Do I ask for a motion to approve?
Yep.
Do we have a motion to approve?
Yeah, I make the motion to accept the minutes of the March 26th meeting.
So, may I make a comment? I was not able to be here for that meeting. I did read the minutes. If I had been here, this is when you tweaked the numbers that were presented, and I would have been a no vote on that. So that could be added
somewhere for what it's worth.
Okay. I
just
want it
on record. I would have been a
notebook.
Okay.
Thank you.
Did we get a second on it?
No. Yes,
we got
it.
Oh, Mike
did? Okay.
Did you mind?
Okay. Okay. Then we just need the vote.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Carries.
It's up to me?
It's up to you.
Okay. Good evening. I'm Bob Parker. I'm a Senior Project Director with Ethanol Reflective Consultant on this project. And unlike Nate, I do find this stuff really exciting, and it is incredibly important that you are confronted with at this point in time in Kaiser's history. So what we're going to do this evening is there's really two agenda items with the PAC. One is to go through the housing strategies. I'll give you a brief overview of those, and then hopefully we can get direction and I think a recommendation from the PAC to forward that on to the decision-making bodies, and then we'll talk a little bit about the conclusions of the housing needs analysis if we have time, but we really need to get to the strategies this evening. And the strategies are the action part of this, right? The technical analysis is to help you understand the problem. The strategies are intended to help you address the problem.
So to go from one page to the next, I used the arrow buttons. One more. There.
Okay. So here we are. It's May 29th. We're in PAC 4. And what we're talking about is the housing strategy and results of the land sufficiency analysis. If everybody read the article in the Times this today, the information in the article was correct. Kaiser doesn't have enough land to accommodate housing for the next 20 years based on the population forecast and the amount of population allocated. In 7, we'll have a public open house, and we encourage everybody to stay for that. So let's talk about strategy. Hopefully all the committee members received this memo that says draft present housing strategy on it. So this articulates the core of the strategies that, that we discussed and went to. So the way we think about the strategy and the way the strategy is structured is that there's a set of strategic priorities in the document. And those priorities are derived from the technical analysis. Yeah, so the technical analysis identifies things that you think are priorities. There's a set of goals and then actions, specific actions are in here. We frame around the strategic priorities. And so the strategic priorities are around land supply and availability, not surprisingly. Priority 2 is to encourage a broader mix of housing types. Priority 3 is to identify strategies to support affordable housing. And priority 4 is around evaluating funding tools. And before I get into these, I want to articulate that most of these, or many of these strategies, require legislative amendments to the Kaiser Zoning Code. So those will go through a process of planning commission, and if there are legislative amendments, then there will be required public hearings and ample opportunity for the community to provide input on those particular policy changes. So what we're looking for from the committee this evening is not exactly what the strategy should be, but does the strategy in principle make sense to the board, to the planning commission for further consideration. So again, land supply, broader mix of housing types, strategies to support affordable housing, and funding tools. Okay, so these were some of the biggest takeaways. The city doesn't have enough land. The city is predominantly seeing single-family detached development, and the mix that the committee approved boosts the amount of both single-family attached as well as multifamily housing that you're planning for the next 20 years. Strategies to support affordable housing. So there's very little housing that's available that can be considered affordable to households with incomes less than $35,000. The vast majority of these households are cost burdened. And then finally, funding tools. So if the city devotes funding to this, then the city can have broad programmatic support for certain types of housing activities. So any questions about strategic priorities before I move on? Okay. So I'm just going to walk through these, and I'm not going to get into a lot of details on them, but if you have questions about what any of these actions means or how it will get implemented or manifest moving forward, feel free to stop me as we go through. So the first goal is to provide residents land to meet the housing needs of needed housing types. So this is foundational. This is what Goal 10 requires the city to do. And then we'll discuss there's a few different pathways that the city could take on this. The first action is to evaluate need for and risk of an urban boundary, growth boundary amendment. And that's, we did ask the committee to provide direction on an online survey for that, and we got kind of mixed results on it. But effectively, what we did was to identify three potential pathways moving forward for the city of Kaiser. The first one is to work to define a Kaiser-specific UDB, right? So right now, Salem and Kaiser share a UDB. And when the state looks at it, they look at the Salem Kaiser UDB and make an assessment of whether there's enough land in the Salem Kaiser UDB. The second step of that would then be to go through a set of complicated technical studies. And one of the things that I think is going to happen in the next round of population forecasts is that Kaiser will get a Kaiser-specific population forecast. And if you remember way back to last year when we were talking about forecasts, we basically took the Kaiser Salem forecast and allocated the same percentage of population to Kaiser as you have now, which is about 15.6% of the Salem Kaiser population. Is that a reasonable assumption? It depends. There's a lot of factors that affect that, but one thing that it's foundational. The premise on is the ability to have land to accommodate that housing. And right now, you don't have land. And if you don't have land, you're not going to get the housing, which means you're not going to get the population. So that's a big decision. So you do technical studies, and then you go through a process called an alternatives analysis, looking outside the UDB. There's a statutory priority scheme for inclusion of lands in the UDB that grants what are called exceptions areas, lands that have been given exceptions to farm and forest goals, down to high productivity farmland.
Yes. Sorry to interrupt you. But no. It is, as you were mentioning those variables of how they go into the population estimates, the land and availability and so forth, those things are taken into account. So if we were our own entity and they saw that we had very little land to build on, would that work in our favor? Or is the population growth estimates based on, I mean, you mentioned the availability of land and housing and so forth, but I guess what are some of the other variables?
Well, I'm not an expert on how Portland State does the forecast, and Angela, feel free to jump in here. Angela's our regional DLCD rep. But they do look at demographic factors, and they use a cohort method, which looks at births, deaths, and immigration. And one of the challenges in Oregon is that something like 70% of our population growth is due to immigration. And the challenge with that is that we don't really have good information on the people that are moving here. So are those people going to be young families? Are they going to be retirees? What kind of housing needs are they going to have? And so on. So we end up making a set of assumptions about what those households look like. It's not clear to me at this point, Councillor, whether or not you would be... whether or not a Portland State forecast that was specific for Kaiser would still allocate 15.6%, or if they would look at something different, there's a good chance you might get a lower forecast. Yeah, the specific UGB. And my understanding is they're going to do that whether or not the UGB splits. And
it's 2020, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
I thought maybe we also talked about,
and
it was a while ago, so I may have misunderstood, but then we also talked about how it works in our favor in the fact that Salem has more buildable land than we do, and so there may not be a requirement to have as much buildable land because Salem can compensate for what we don't have. Or
yeah, well, that's a good segue into the options, right? And so there's three pathways the city can take on this. First is to pursue this pathway of having an independent UGB, getting a population forecast, probably updating this study, doing an economic opportunities analysis, and then making a determination of how much land total the city would need to accommodate 20 years of growth, right? And at that point, the conclusion is almost certainly going to be the city doesn't have enough land at that point. So at that point, you're obligated to either, because basically our growth management system requires that you plan for growth. So you have three pathways at that point. You can either demonstrate that you can get enough land use efficiency within the UGB to accommodate the population, which is pretty difficult. It's got a fairly sparse supply of residential land. My opinion, and this is an opinion, not an opinion that's based on deep analysis, is that the city would be able to justify the ability to accommodate all that growth within the UGB, which then means that you have to look at land outside the UGB and then get into this issue of alternatives analysis. But the experience of other cities in this region is indicative of what you might go through. If you've been around for a while, you've probably heard about the legacies of McMinnville and Newburgh and Woodburn, all of whom went through long contentious UGB processes that had multiple appeals, and McMinnville finally gave up on theirs, or reinitiating that process. Woodburn got through with the last 10 years, and Newburgh ended up abandoning their process also. So there's a lot of risk with that approach. So that's pathway one. Pathway two is to continue to have a shared UGB. And we did a housing study for the city of Salem in 2015, which concluded that the city has ample land to accommodate 20 years of growth. And when we put Salem and Kaiser together, I think the conclusion is still that there's enough land in the Salem Cosmic UGB to kind of make a point of growth. What we found in both cities was a lack of land in zone for higher density housing. So that's an issue that's going to have to be addressed regardless, or should be addressed regardless. And Salem is going through a process now at this point to sort through where they want to zone land for higher density housing types. That process will require coordination with the City of Salem and an agreement on how much population each jurisdiction is going to accommodate.
But isn't that just a zoning question as opposed to a physical land question?
Yeah, so that's all work that the city has. You coordinate with the City of Salem, but there's not a county action necessarily that's involved in there. The city has more autonomy, in my opinion, and control over how it approaches that process within the constraints of negotiating with the City of Salem that process. So that's also a complicated process. The third option is to do some combination of those two things, and that, and at least my view, takes the complications of negotiating Salem and the complications of the UGB and piles them both on top of each other, which is maybe the least desirable alternative for the city moving forward. This strategy basically says that the city needs to provide direction to community development on what approach that they would like to take, and we don't necessarily advocate for a decision. I think that's a decision the council needs to weigh in on and provide direction. It's a big decision that's going to influence the growth pattern of this community for decades, 1,500 years in the future.
Wasn't that one of the purposes of having this committee?
I think so.
To make a recommendation on one of these three to the city council?
I'm looking at it.
Is that an option, or do we just forget that?
Although it's outside of the specific authorized charter for this committee, I believe it's all part and parcel to that discussion. So I think a recommendation, or at least a comment on that aspect of it, would be certainly welcome by the council.
Okay. Other questions, comments?
Yeah, I'd be curious what some of you are thinking on this. I don't know how I feel. Does anyone else have any opinions about this? I mean, I get opinions sometimes that, oh, they're going to expand the urban drink here, the Iris Gardens, and the Hobby Fields. And I'm going, well, wait a minute, they haven't done that. I mean, that's way ahead of me.
So, David, you're actually jumping ahead. We are actually going to take a poll of everybody in this room about that question. And so.
Later?
Yeah, later.
Okay.
That's my job. See, when you start, I gotta jump up.
But if the committee does have direction that they want to provide, I think that's
good. At this point, I really would like to see what it is. How are you going to help? Does anybody care?
No, I think it's. I think some people may want to increase the urban boundary. There's plus and minuses to it, right? But I think you have to think about the cost and the frustration that's going to be involved in that, right? I mean, anytime you want to expand the urban growth boundary, you're going to have, lawsuits and other things that you're going to have to deal with in the city that the city's going to have to deal with, right? So that's why I think that the way we have it set up right now, even though we don't have a specific information on Kaiser, I think it's kind of more favorable, in my opinion, because we can use Salem.
You say, so you're looking at option
one. Two.
Option two is to continue the way we are with Salem.
Then we get more control, right? Because then they can't come in and say, you need more land, right? Because we can use Salem to help us to support the land that they have, to support our needs. And then we have more control over saying, well, we can do whatever we want with that.
May I have a quick question? Who referees between Kaiser and Salem when we decide to discuss the urban growth
boundary?
Huh? She does. I didn't mean to look at her, but I get the impression that it's not a congenial relationship.
A role,
Our agency will play a big role in saying what are the required documents or required updates to each of your comp plans or each of your analyses. So I think the last meeting we kind of discussed a little bit about periodic review. One of the things that our agency would look at doing is once this split happens, you would immediately be put in periodic review, meaning that you each have to comply.
So I mean, what if you don't split?
That's great.
No. Who's going to referee the discussion that occurred next week between the city of Baghdad and the city of Salem? How many, what number of houses in the total urban growth boundary we can assume are ours, use up, and what we have
to do? So that's a good question. Our agency will obviously have to play a role. We have not discussed how would we make Salem accommodate the houses that can't be accommodated on Kaiser's urban area.
Right, but if they're looking at their long-range future,
right,
and they said, well, we've got to keep it for 50 years, and you're just doing whatever you can, you're stuck. Can they do that?
No, because the UGB as a whole has to accommodate both the needs of Kaiser and the needs of Salem. So our
agency... You enforce that.
We would enforce that.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's a combined UGB, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other instance in Oregon where you have two cities that share a border in a common UGB?
No.
I mean, we have the examples of Springfield trying to grow and Southern trying to grow. They're distinctly different.
Right, they're different.
Yeah.
They don't share. Yeah, so Salem County mm-hmm.
is
the only
one
shared
UGB outside
Metro.
It's the
easiest
Springfield
city,
right?
Yeah.
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 But I think when we talk about more that Salem has a lot of space that they can go in, so I mean it seems to me like it that they would be okay with that.
I would hope to. I'm just
You got to put them down.
And there might be multiple theories of strategy, but you're just beginning to scratch the surface on how complicated this is.
So, just everybody know, we gotta get through the strategies first.
Quickly.
David, be quiet.
Okay.
So there's a lot here, obviously, right? So let's continue on. Take your notes, and if you have questions, we can hopefully have some time to discuss them, or you can send them to us after the meeting. So the second one is to evaluate opportunities to increase residential densities. And basically what we identified here is a possibility to modify the density ranges that are outlined in comprehensive plan policy. And so right now the low density residential allows densities up to 8 dwelling units per gross acre, MDR 8 to 16, and MDHR greater than 16. And so the city could relax those standards and allow higher densities. And so one of our comments is those are relatively high densities because they're standing in gross acres. Project's actually already been pretty well on this policy, and this particular approach probably ultimately ends up having a relatively modest effect over time. It does fall into the category, and this committee discusses, of allowing things to happen rather than requiring them to happen, right? So it reduces barriers, but it doesn't require development at higher densities. Any questions on action 1.2? Okay, let's carry on here then. So strategy 2 is to encourage a broader mix of housing types, and the goal, as we stated, is allowing and encourage a broader diversity of housing types with a focus on middle density housing types. Many of you may have been following the discussion about House Bill 2001. It's someplace in the legislature, and may or may not get passed, but effectively it does some of the things that this strategy is attempting to address. So there's two actions on this. One is to encourage duplexes, cottage houses, townhomes, row houses, front and quadplexes, and lower density residential zones. And so this would address what some people call missing middle housing. Again, this is a process that would require code amendments, would go through planning commission. And at that point, there'd be additional discussions about how it applied, where it applied, all those kinds of complicated questions that the committee would want to work with. Again, this falls into the area of encouraging. It doesn't require the developers build these kinds of housing units. It just allows them to do that should they decide they want to. Questions on this one? All right, so 2.2 talks about the tiny home standards. There was a fair amount of discussion in previous talk about tiny homes. As it turns out, Kaiser's not the only place that's thinking about tiny homes. It is the thinking about tiny homes is, I think, in some respects ahead of how cities have crafted policy for tiny homes. This policy would begin to look at those standards, and we would recommend that the city start by looking at what other cities are doing at this point and what kind of strategies seem to be right sized for the city of Kaiser. And so at this point, this again is a research project that would inform a policy discussion. Questions about this one? Okay. So goal 3 is about affordable housing, and the goal is stated is promote lower cost housing with focus on low and middle income housing, including service sector workers or what's sometimes called workforce housing. And there's 3 strategies in this that we got direction from the committee on. The first was evaluate reducing parking requirements in certain instances, controversial potentially. Strategy depending on exactly what those standards are, how they get applied, where they get applied. Second one is to adopt strategies to preserve the existing supply of manufactured housing parks. We talked about that at the last meeting. And that's one of the affordable housing types, although residents still pay space fees in manufactured housing parks. And then the third one is to continue to partner with the city of Salem to develop and preserve affordable housing, so that could be through the Marin County Housing Authority or through Salem's program. David, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah. On the manufactured home parks, I tried to research that a little bit, not with you probably don't know all this, but some cities and states have, developed a code which said to prevent the closure of these parks or make it difficult. A different thing, for example, requiring the owner of the property to move the homes off the land before they sell, which costs up to $10,000-$15,000 per unit. That the guy who owns the property is probably going to be hesitant to want to sell the property if that's the condition. There's some others about rent control also, but we don't have very many. And everything I've seen looks like they're closing. And that if we're trying to provide low income housing, affordable housing, we can't afford to have these people sell and rent.
Yeah, so that's part of what this strategy is.
Right, how far do we go? Do we recommend that the Planning Commission look at that? Do something about it.
Yeah. Other questions, comments on this suite of policies?
I just have a comment on the evaluate the action item number 3.1, evaluate reduce parking requirements. I assume that's to promote increased densities in housing projects?
It can be that, or it can be to reduce costs, because parking takes up land, and so the dynamic between number of parking spaces and what it costs them to put up units can affect the viability of projects.
My experience is that developers that develop multifamily housing for themselves to hold and manage actually want more than the minimum parking. So I don't know how effective that will be.
Well, again, this is why these actions end up being processes that go through Planning Commission, because there's a lot behind them and a lot involved in terms of making the policy choices.
I also think we're supposed to think about how high up you want to go. I lived in Honolulu, for example. If you have an apartment, yeah, you're in a spot where your parking lot's going to be 6 feet, 6 stories tall. And in a very small footprint. And I was in New York for a couple months, and there they don't have parking by the apartments. There aren't parking lots anywhere. And surprisingly, if Kaiser wants to become an urban center where people are on foot and bicycle, things like that, instead of everybody in a car going somewhere, you don't need the parking lots. So it's kind of a decision if you want to do that. Or you can build, you know, how tall you want to make it. The parking lot is kind of expensive. But we have enough land to spread out like we did in Kaiser State.
All right, any comments on this suite of actions? Okay, so the last one is to evaluate funding tools, and this goal is to explore creative ways to support affordable housing and infrastructure development. And there was two actions under this one: evaluate creative system development charge financing options or opportunities, and the second one is to evaluate creation of an urban renewal district. There's a couple more not on this slide. But SDCs are basically the city's mechanism by which it pays for infrastructure. So they get assessed on new dwelling units, and they go into a pool to pay for off-site infrastructure. In many communities, they're either reducing or waiving those for projects that meet certain affordability standards. But the city still has to provide the infrastructure depending on where it is. And the second one is evaluate creation of an urban renewal district. Some cities have used creative mechanisms of tax increment financing to support affordable housing. Most cities have taken the approach that Salem has taken. Salem's got, I think, 7 urban renewal districts, and they're all around economic development and strategies to encourage jobs effectively. So, questions, comments on these two strategies?
I think it's kind of important when you look at these that you recognize we didn't vote up or down on any of these individual strategies. So when you're looking up here and thinking this is a proposal from the committee or the PAC recommended these strategies, that's not the case. So there was no up or down on any of these strategies. I look at evaluating imposing construction outside of tax, for instance, there wasn't really much discussion about that. So just when you look at this document, this part, make sure you recognize these weren't recommendations from the PAC.
Where did they come from?
Well, yeah, this is a strategy if we narrowed it down, and they came from both technical analysis as well as some discussion with the PAC, and so Mike had brought some of these. We didn't have up or down votes. We have an online survey instrument. But again, these are advisory in nature. This is an action plan that basically the committee would forward to city council, and then city council can decide whether it wants to accept all of these actions or modify them, and which ones that it ultimately wants to put on the planning staff's work program.
So the bottom line is that these range of options, they are just simply the range of options that are out there in the world to choose from. And so that's why it's important to have this kind of sounding board so that everybody can say, construction X, Y, Z, you know. That doesn't make sense because of X, Y, or Z. And that's what we're going to get through here tonight, is to have your input on, does that make sense? Should that be pursued? Or is that just simply not something that you think there'd be a tolerance for? They will show up in front of the Planning Commission and the Council, but your input is the vital key as to how it moves forward. Does that make sense?
And to clarify, too, we're not saying that this is something that's being considered. We're talking about evaluating it to be considered, right? So it's making sure that all the facts are being presented to the City Council so the City Council can make a decision.
And so there's an important interaction between some of these. So Action 4.1 is a strategy that would be more appropriate if the city chose to expand their urban growth boundaries. FTC financing may or may not be a useful tool for the city as it stands right now. Urban renewal, I think, is maybe a different story. So lots of funding tools that we put in here were evaluating construction excise tax, essentially the state passed enabling legislation. the cities can hook up to a 1% tax on the permitted value of building permits. And presumably the city would take that fund, whatever it decided to do, CET, put it into a pool of money and use it to make investments for affordable housing projects. The second one is to evaluate the implementation of local improvement district programs. Again, this is a strategy that you typically look at either areas that are underutilized where you want to intensify uses, or in urban boundary expansion areas should the city decide to amend the boundary. And then the last one is a fairly straightforward one, to consider partnerships to pursue grants or loans. So that would be partnerships with the city of Salem, with nonprofit entities, to bring money in that would allow development of affordable housing.
So, this is a great problem to have, but it is a problem that there are a lot of bodies in this room. And so, are you okay? Do you want to move location? We could move into the council chambers. It would be a disruption in the thought process and the discussion. It would take probably 10 minutes before we were all plugged in and up and running. What is your sensitivity? Are you okay? Do we, if we have many more people show up, we won't be okay. Although we'll put them as part of the committee.
Yeah, so they can.
Okay, our side yard setbacks just got shrunk. So, is everybody okay? Shall we plug on in and not do the disruption? Are we okay?
Yeah.
Thumbs up. Okay. All right.
So that is all of the recommendations in the action plan. At this point, I would open the committee to discussion about any or all of these things, and looking for direction on whether this is something you want to recommend for forwarding to City Council for consideration, or you want to recommend it as with amendments, or you want to spend more time processing through.
Can we go back to strategy one and start from the beginning?
Sure.
Wait, strategy one?
Yes. Nick, can you clarify, evaluate opportunities to increase allowable residential densities? Does that have to do with zoning and those and
exactly.
And yes. The like? Yes. It could be modifications to density ranges that are codified in the comprehensive plan, but it also could be modifications to minimum lot sizes within individual zoning districts.
For example, what's happening in the revitalization plan is we are looking at those specific efficiency measures that will increase the density in the corridors. That's exactly what that is trying to do. My thoughts are that action 1.2, so that's an allowable thing. I would rather see that be a required thing before I would want to go to 1.1 to seriously consider expanding the urban growth. And especially with the fact that we are a joint urban growth boundary with Salem, and the current situation is that we don't have to provide for all of that projected growth, but if we can provide for a bit more than we could otherwise by using 1.2, then we wouldn't have to consider 1.1, if all that makes sense. They're kind of, pardon? I said they're linked.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you really can't do one without the other.
Well, why can't we do 1.2 without 1.9?
Because we are joined, and at some point we're all going to have to sit around the same table and examine how we're going to create land use efficiencies. And that's all going to be part and parcel to the discussion of using our growth boundary either as it is or modify it in whatever way. Right, Mom? Press me
up. So I think the city has the authority to require or to change these things if it desires to do so. I think that the interaction between these things, and you can do something with action 1.2 independent of 1.1, or you can start on that as an initial step. This is something that can be done in short term if the city wants to move forward with it. This is probably a longer term discussion.
That's where we have four options on 1.1, correct?
Yeah, three options.
Okay. I don't know. Does anybody know? I don't know. I had to look this up. But just for information, and Bob, tell me if I'm wrong in this. It's about 640-50 acres in a square mile. Okay. And we needed, and if you look, I went through that, I can't remember the exact projections, but we needed about 400 or 500 acres to meet what the state says we're going to have in people if you decided to do the urban growth boundary. That's 3/4 of the square mile. So I went driving today to see if I could find how far that, where that is. You can't go a tenth of a square mile if you're in prime farmland. So you can put, I don't know where you put it, but basically, if you look at Google Maps, take a look at Kaiser, take a look at the north city limits, now you need to add 400 or 500 acres just to meet the minimum. If you're going to expand it, that's the least you could expand. If you're going to do that, that's just the minimum. You're doing that in land 12 people. So you've lost, Irish fields are within a half mile, all the new fields, tops. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're looking at putting houses in. So, because we don't have any place to go to the left, we have to go north, south. And we're important to the freeway folks, and even Chamal is already in Salem. So that's your only place to go. So I just wanted that people get an idea of what 3/4 of the square mile looks like. It's huge. It's a lot of property. Now, does that make sense? Is that, I don't know if people understood when you decide to move an acre or two or 500 acres, that's a lot of land.
So I think the other piece of this that's important for the city to understand, and it was articulated in the editorial, is the city then has an obligation to provide services to that land, and those services aren't free.
And that's the cost. So
that's point one. Point two, if the city expanded the UGB, let's say you have that extra 500 acres in the UGB today, it probably would be available for development for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And importantly, the experience has been most of the areas have taken 7 to 10 or 12 years before they actually come online. So this would be a very long term strategy for the city to look at, and it may be something that the city wants to come back to if you choose to defer at this point work with the city of Salem. But it's incredibly complicated, and it's very expensive.
Here's a problem that we're gonna run into is if we don't decide to go forward with action 1.1, which is the city evaluation, then in 5 years from now, we're going to be stuck behind them all as opposed to ahead of it, right? Because
do the evaluation now.
But then you're talking about another, 12, 14 years until you can actually use that.
I guess we wouldn't meet the LCDC rules if we try.
Well, keeping in context, the evaluation is whether the city wants to pursue an independent urban growth boundary and a boundary expansion, or wants to work with Salem to jointly address housing needs, or some combination of those two things. And I think those are fundamental policy decisions that the council has to grapple with before.
Those three options listed.
We do not on this.
Stand urban growth boundary.
You're on page 8, 8, 9.
Yeah, page 8, 9 in the summary package. So one was to expand the urban growth boundary, or examine how we would expand it. Two was to stick with Salem,
yeah.
State of Joint Group, and the option three was some combination of the two. I think we should go ahead.
Well, does Salem have a say? I mean, because we can decide, oh yeah, we're going to stay as a common UGB, and Salem says, no, we're not. I mean, is that a possibility?
Yes.
So is that another reason we need to evaluate for that?
So the only experience that exists in this in the state is Eugene Springfield, and what happened there was that I think Senator Beyer introduced a bill, this is back in 2007, I think, that passed the legislature, which basically split the UGBs, and then the cities had to go through a process of updating their comprehensive plans, reviewing their urban growth boundaries, and that process took more than 10 years for both of those cities. Springfield just got their order a couple months ago on their boundary. Eugene finished theirs, I think, 2 years ago. So it's a long-term process. I'm not an attorney, but I think there's probably another pathway until we can confirm this. It would split the UGB that could be done by joint decision of the two jurisdictions to somehow establish independent UGBs.
Who created the joint? Was Felicia's question was yours, if we stay married, does Salem have a veto say on
that? Right. Yeah.
So her question is, if we stay married, can they veto that? And I suppose, as Bob is describing, they could go to the legislature or whatever they wanted to do. But they have never expressed a desire to get a divorce.
Okay.
So not to my knowledge.
Yeah, just to clarify, so the city of Salem wouldn't have any reason to want to expand because all of the land is on their side. They're set for growth. David, to your point, you're not out of compliance because UGB as a whole has enough land for the next year, so you wouldn't be out of compliance. It's just where would that housing go? This is the multifamily, right? So this is where I think Bob's saying that the two cities, the hybrid approach would be the two cities getting together and saying, okay, Salem, you know what? You actually need to rezone a little bit more land for multifamily because the UGB as a whole does not have enough. That's, I think, the strategy
of the hybrid approach. But I don't see Salem going to the legislature or coming to the table to want to split the UGB. Just my
take on the path. Could Salem satisfy the needs that we have? Yes. Not Salem, but the UGB as a whole, and just the urbanized land is on Salem's side. That's where we think that some reconciliation of the two housing needs would have to happen between the two cities.
Yeah, Salem is okay with that?
They're going to have to. I mean, they don't have a choice. It's a shared UGB. So that's where I think our agency and our commission would have to potentially come to the table to, you know, mediate or enforce.
If they said no, they'd have to divorce, right? We'd have to break up the...
No,
they can't
say no.
Realistically, our number that says we need a certain acreage to accommodate the growth based upon the assumptions of moving the growth forward based on the splits that have been established is somewhat irrelevant with the shared UGB because whether or not we have enough land or not, Angela's agency would say the entirety of the UGB can accommodate. So it really is more of the choice of we're not looking at it. Choosing how Tiger is going to choose to move forward with their growth.
Yeah, so the only complicating thing here, just the little one, is that you have two jurisdictions. But the way Angela's agency looks at it is you have this thing called the Salem Cosmic UGB. That that UGB has an amount of land in it. And it just happens that some of that land is within the incorporated boundaries of Kaiser, some of that land is in the incorporated boundaries of Salem, and some of it's in the incorporated boundaries of Marion and Polk counties. So they're looking at it and saying, well, when we look at this, and we look at the population forecast for this thing called Salem-Kaiser, and we look at the land supply across the two jurisdictions, there's enough there that to accommodate 20 years of land need. That's not going to be the case forever. At some point, that land supply will get consumed, and this particular issue will come to bear, right? And the city is going to have a joint UGB. It's complicated, and Lane County, they have a boundary commission that helps mediate some of these things. I'm not as clear on exactly what the governance structure is here, and I think a lot of this gets into policy areas that nobody has any experience with. It just has to be worked through.
Yeah, we provided some guidance on that to both cities and counties on potentially working through the intergovernmental agreement that's between the counties and the cities. So there is a process in place. It's just a matter of, you know, the city, if the city Kaiser wants to go down that road of expanding, of divorcing, that would be the first step. They would bring it to me.
It's the first place where you would go to start this. A dispute resolution process. Yeah. It just seems to me like I don't even know why we would consider that because we have such a good arrangement right now with the city of Salem.
Just keep in mind, though, as Bob said, it's an opportunity, not in life. We still have work to do, and there is the problems change. It changes more into comp plan and zoning kind of configurations as to how we're going to share housing responsibility. As Bob pointed out, the entire UGB has a deficit of high density housing types. So we have work to do, but it is this set of problems versus all of the other sets of problems that the other options would be.
Well, I look at Action 1.1 and all I can see is millions and millions and millions of dollars to do that. We don't have millions and millions and millions of dollars in Kaiser unless you all want to chip in.
So not necessarily. If we do option two, that's working with the current urban growth boundary, right?
So we could do two. We could do...
I think it's worth
it. I think it would still be 1.2.
I fit no, even 1.2?
No, 1.2.
Yeah, 1.1 is kind of worded funny to me because it almost seems like we want to see the potential to grow the urban growth boundary.
Well, what you're not seeing here is there's three options that are
here. Exactly.
You look at the option is to evaluate those two
and two sets now.
Yeah. Yeah, those three pathways.
Yeah.
The first one is divorce, expand the UGB. Second one is work with Salem. Think about the ways to accommodate this multifamily housing need, and Kaiser does have some obligation to think about those things, in our opinion. Or to some hybrid. My opinion, I don't live here, so I'll offer my professional opinion on this, is option two is the more expedient and less risky approach for Kaiser to pursue at this point. It's not a no action. It's going to require a lot of work moving forward. To work with Salem to figure out how you're going to accommodate within the joint UGB. At some point, Kaiser may want to think about, or Kaiser-Salem may want to think about what's going to happen when there's not enough land jointly in this UGB.
I think we should get ahead of it, for sure. Yeah.
Under the current priority scheme, Kaiser's always going to be the last place to look because David did a great job of explaining what's north of here. It is the lowest priority land, and if you look around the entire, say, when Kaiser UGB, there'll be higher priority lands than the jurisdictions would need to make a very strong case to go to these lands north of Kaiser.
Which is really precisely why the UGB was drawn the way it was in 73. By Salem. Mm-hmm. So you look at it, and it does a nice job of gerrymandering around prime farmland and taking in exception areas and already built out areas. And so that's, you know, again, the wisdom, I think, is sharing that UGB with Salem.
Okay.
So can we, I think we've talked a lot about the options, the three options. Let's try and make it through our action items and see if we can, just so you understand what's on the table and what those options may be. We want to make sure that you understand what they entail.
Any final comments on these two?
So we're going to reach some sort of consensus or vote or recommend later. After these people get their chance.
No.
Get a chance to come.
Yeah, everybody gets a chance. So let's plow ahead. Move forward.
Okay. Goal two, broader diversity and housing types. Comments, discussion on these two actions.
I just think it's just important to highlight for this discussion, this is not low-income housing. This is, you know, that missing middle piece. Even tiny homes are not cheap. They're about, $80,000 per tiny home? Yeah. Well, not to mention the SECs and all that other stuff. Those are kind of separate conversations, which is, you know, why they're under two different goals. But, you know, just because they're higher density does not mean that they're going to be low income.
They're lower cost. As you point out, nothing is cheap unless it's subsidized.
My son was up in Portland in a row house. You can put in a triple row house, three houses, on one standard small city lot. So if you talk about increasing density, that seems to me a lot. So if we're trying to get to, we still got to, I know we're still married to Salem in some way or other, but if we still have to increase the density of the number of people that are in kinds of, and if you don't go out and you stay still and you increase the number of people, the density has to go up. So, I mean, if you haven't lived in the row house, some of the people who have lived in their whole life back, you can make it happy.
So does that satisfy goal 10 of the statewide planning? The cities have to, this is from the notes from February, housing at all income levels? I don't see.
Well, the city's obligation is to provide the land for these needed housing types. Like the city doesn't build housing. So to Councilor Reed's point, and density does not necessarily equate to affordability. There's some relation there, but not all higher density housing is would be considered affordable to lower
income.
So this is one step. This would be what we would consider above an affordability measure as well as a land use efficiency measure.
Those aren't necessarily multi-family homes. Because a townhome is one person, one family.
Yeah, that would be a single family attached consensus about it. Cottage housing.
Not looking at multi-family.
Well,
like housing.
Quadplexes can be multi-family, or duplexes would be considered multi-family.
Right now, we have areas that don't allow any of these. What is it called?
Well, so again, remember this is the broader mix of housing types. It's under that category, so this is a subcategory that tries to create that broader mix. Currently, we're, let's just say, roughly 70% single-family detached housing in the residential single-family zone. So right now in that zone, while we allow things such as ADUs and we allow primarily single-family detached homes, you can do zero-lot line homes, and you can do duplexes, but only on corner lots currently. So I think this action item is getting at maybe expanding what we currently have to something more.
I think that an important addition to that change is that the city would need to determine where to apply these things. It wouldn't necessarily say everything in the zone, because there's a lot of variations on this, and it is important for the city to consider livability in neighborhoods and those kinds of things as they go through these policies, which is why there's a planning commission process and
And this is unless the state passes HB 2001, which will force the issue for you.
I also want to make a really kind of, if you realize how important it is not to put multiple plans. I mean, we need to spread this stuff out so that you have a more heterogeneous spread throughout the whole city. You don't want to put all your low-income houses together. Any city that's ever done that will tell you why that's a bad idea. In terms of policing, crime rate, deterioration of the property, and so on. So if you're going to put these things in, they really need to be scattered around. Now, there's nothing wrong with you living next door to a three-row house or a triplex or somebody put in four little cottage homes on a couple lots. It would be that for those people to be throughout the city, not congregated in one area. So if we change the zoning so that it allows these houses to be everywhere or within reason within the city, would be good for the county, that us in terms of three people there would be good for the people. They have better rules on us.
Yes.
You want to put in cottage housing, townhomes, squad stretches? That's all fine and dandy. Do you have the infrastructure to support it? Do you have the water? Do you have the sewer? Do you have the parking? Do you have the streets? Storm drainage? Is that going to handle all that?
Well, I think that's part of what the evaluation piece would be to make a determination of what areas would be appropriate.
Don't you have to do that before you even consider any of this?
Well,
I mean, you can't just go out and build a bunch of these shot places and say, oh, yeah, we'll hook up to the sewer. And then you've got a sewer back up. I mean,
some of our foundational assumption here is the city has capacity to accommodate more housing, making housing approvals on an ongoing basis. And so this is an issue of how are we dispersing housing in the community and what kind of community form do we want to encourage? In many places, there is additional capacity that exists in neighborhoods that could be accommodated through infill or redevelopment. This policy doesn't say that developers have to do this. It gives them the option of doing this, at least is the way it's stated right now. Further discussion on the committee?
Well, I think it's also important to point out here that so much of this is market driven. I mean, there's been a lot of talk in town about, oh, let's just build River Road up and so forth. And then, you know, we've also heard that, well, that's all well and good, but there's no market for it. So our job here is not to prescribe, but rather to make possible.
And that was pretty clear the direction that the committee gave us at the last meeting was avoid requiring and focus on allowing. And so we did our best to accommodate that within the draft policies and things right now. Y'all ready to move on? So, strategy 3, support affordable housing, reduce parking, existing supply and manufactured housing parks, and then partnering with the city of Salem.
If the parking, like for a multi-apartment building, do we specify how many parking slots they have to have?
Do
we say that it has to be horizontal parking and they can't go up?
No, they just have to have parking spaces. But our parking standard is pretty generous in requiring parking because of the typical history that we have had with parking is always contentious and always a point of friction between housing types. So our parking standards are pretty expansive, requiring not only parking for each unit, but also visitor parking, that sort of thing. Now, this as we progress, that may change. But again, that's all part of the big picture that we're not trying to get down to that level of detail. We're just trying to say, okay, among the palette of options that we have, this is it. And it may manifest itself in lower parking requirements. But again, that's an issue.
Lower parking create a need for more public transit.
Generally, as we have
that problem now, anyway.
And that's a function of any place that urbanizes. You're always going to have that need, and the way, you know, the way the world progresses, transit and public transportation is going to be an increasing need, no matter which way we do this particular exercise.
That would be exacerbated.
Nobody's talking about what they've done in Portland is allowing multifamily with no parking at all. We're not going there yet.
No, again, the strategy is to move this forward, put it on playing community development's work program, and then take it through a process of doing additional evaluation, considering where it would be appropriate to modify the standards, if it would be appropriate to modify the standards. So there's no commitment here other than to do these evaluations. Which are basic recommendations or actions that are the foundation of the housing strategy.
So who does the evaluation?
Well, it'll be a process. It will be just like with any text amendment process. The Planning Commission will be evaluating a proposal brought forward by, as initiated by either staff, Planning Commission, or council. And so it will just simply go through that whole process of discussion, public hearings, public input, that kind of all the concerns that come forward with every aspect of these specifics. That's why we're not talking about specifics here. We're just saying, among the tools available, it's, you know, looking at your parking standards, looking at your density mix, all of those kinds of things are really what we're trying to say. Here's your tool kit. How do you want to proceed?
There may be technical studies that support some of these actions also.
And generally, when we look at amending things like a parking standard or setbacks or things like that, we also look a lot at other jurisdictions and what they've done. The state provides a model code also that we look to for guidance. Right now, in our development code, I believe that we're overparked a bit in the categories of multifamily compared to what state model code recommends and compared to some of our neighboring jurisdictions. So that's been one of the things that has been looked at and discussed as something that, okay, maybe that's an option where you can capture a little more space on a property. But ultimately, I think Nate said it earlier, we find from the planners that are processing permits or meeting with developers, you know, the folks that are doing their pro formas on land to actually develop projects and invest lots of money to make some money, they want to have enough parking too. So it is a market kind of driven piece that comes into play a lot more than just saying, oh, you can get away with no parking, because nobody's going to build that in Kaiser, especially not right now. So.
Additional committee's discussion.
Are we done building churches and schools again? The existing city limits.
We're building half of high school right now.
I know. But we haven't increased their property by separately.
Well, let's not go there.
Anyway, but I was wondering, because we have a tremendous amount of property tied up in parking lots at schools that we use 5 days a week for 8 hours a day, and churches which we use 1 or 2 days a week.
So, David, let me just say that will there be another school in Kaiser? Well, it depends on what we do with our housing supply. If we densify and if we create much smaller lots and the missing middle, and there's a big influx of population within our boundaries, yes, the Salem Kaiser School District will probably build another school and redistrict and shuffle and do all of that. they won't. Eventually, I imagine there's going to be another high school in the Salem Kaiser School District. But they're not going to build it in Kaiser. Kaiser will, you know, they're building this high school to last for a very long time. They will redistrict the boundary and they will carve off populations to other schools, and there will probably be, you heard here first, there'll probably be another high school somewhere in East Salem. That then everybody gets shuffled around, and that's why we don't focus on, well, what's the school district going to do? Your guess is as good as mine at this point. So our task is to address our housing need and to find out how do we want to approach it. So that's why these action items are up there and say, okay, well that's just simple. I honestly, we've been through, there's a couple of odd ones, like as somebody pointed out, the excise, the construction excise. I don't know where that discussion is going to go, but this will not decide to implement a construction excise tax. This simply will say, you want to have that in the mix of what is consumed.
Why is it in Action 3.2 say preserve existing supply? What are there people that want to get rid of the manufacturers?
Mm-hmm.
Other than the owners. Other than owners who want to sell off and redevelop that property.
Yeah. That one's there mostly because of statutory reasons.
So we put it in? Are we trying to preserve
it? No, they try to preserve it.
Okay.
But can we recommend that they do some things to preserve the existing spots?
Yeah. Beyond what the statutes require. So again, that would be a council policy decision.
Yeah.
Basically, the state requires relocation assistance if certain manufactured housing parks transition from what they are. The challenge with them is that it's literally impossible to replace those units once they're gone.
Right.
To replace them with something affordable.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's been no, from what I can tell Angela, you know, this, we haven't seen any manufactured home parks built in Oregon for a long time.
Yeah, for the last 20, 30 years.
So are mobile home parks under that same idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
So other discussion? Move on to the last set of actions here. So these are financing strategies, and again, these are all evaluated, and as I suggested before, some of the strategies like action for actions like 4.1 and let's see, 4.4 local improvement districts are things that would be, in our opinion, more appropriate if the city pursues a boundary amendment. But looking at the extent to which modifying system development charges and other financing mechanisms might encourage the private sector to build certain types of housing is the general idea behind this set of strategies. Any question about
that? As part of the funding tools, I understand there's a bill that the current legislature that addresses the issue, because the legislature and those who are experiencing problems funding infrastructure in cities, they've ensured that a bill is in the legislature. I apologize for not being able to tell you the bill number, and I don't know at what point it is in the process, but it probably, I would recommend that staff and the committee, anybody involved with anything to do with funding, at least be made aware of what that bill would allow or require.
Yeah, there's a number of things that are moving through legislation right now that might affect the way the city will think about these. So this process will be done before or around the time the legislature finishes up. We have to have all of our products. The city has to have all their products in the state by June 30th because this project's going to a technical assistance grant for the Department of Land Conservation Development.
Does that mean staff will not look for the bill and not present it to the committee because it isn't yet adopted and this process has to move forward prior to the ultimate disposition of that bill in the legislature?
Well, we had some discussion about various bills that are moving through and in some level it ended up being kind of speculative at this point because it's not codified and it's not a requirement of the city. And so the kind of prudent approach that most jurisdictions we work with have taken are to wait and see what happens and then move forward based on whether or not that becomes law or not. Some of these things, like the action around missing metal housing types, are things that that the city can pursue independent of requirements. So if the House Bill 2001 moves through, then the city will be required to look at those housing types in low density single family zones. In this instance, we're saying the city should look at, and the city, in this instance, would have much more discretion, presumably, over how it chose to apply or not apply that strategy relative to what the state does. For example, Senate Bill 1051 basically required jurisdictions to allow AUs to use accessory dwelling units in all low density single family zones. That's a pretty blunt tool. And cities spent the better part of a year figuring out how to develop a set of policies around how to accommodate those housing types. So that's not by way of saying that cities should ignore these, but my way to see how it's been done. A terrible approach to take.
For example, if the bill is out of committee and through the House and tomorrow gets a pass, the Senate passes it, will staff be looking at that bill? And if the governor announces he intends to sign it, will staff then not assume it's going to be passed and not provide any information to the committee about that bill?
So I'm going to defer that question to staff.
Jim, I will look. Yes.
That's at the last meeting of the committee. So, yeah, we won't look at
it. All right, any committee discussion on either of these actions? Okay, let's go to the last slide. Constructed excise tax. Local improvement districts. Again, local improvement districts are often used in areas that are under service that you're trying to get to develop, and there's not city capacity to fund those things.
Local improvement, no, I would submit the level I look at, if we wanted to put sidewalks in front of our house, the 12 of us on that block got together, and we could form a local improvement district and put sidewalks in. And then the city would collect, I'm not sure how it works, but we have to pay through our, it's not taxes, but you pay at the same time.
Right, and a separate assessment.
Separate assessment, and then that money is used to put inside. However, my question is, who gets to form the local improvement district? Because I thought we kind of voted against absentee landlord a couple hundred years ago. And that, why would if a group of people who live there, all of the residents in that block, want to put in a sidewalk and they vote to do it, why, but half of the units are rentals, duplexes. Those people in the duplex don't get to vote on the local improvement district?
Well,
that's what I want to be clear.
So,
well, in that particular case, I'm going to probably understand. Shannon, are you on the clock right now? Are you here? Our city attorney's in the room. You've heard it.
I'm Shannon Johnson, city attorney. The biggest example of an LID, which was the biggest in the state, probably built the tram, was Kaiser Station. It's typically more commercial. The David, you're exactly right, except that the property owners get to decide. And it can be, you can end up with one even if you vote against it. I think it's two-thirds. Two-thirds of the property owners vote to impose the assessment that gets imposed on the entire
area. Theoretically, none of the people who are voting on it even live in Kaiser.
It's the property owner.
That's what I'm saying. They may not even live in Kaiser.
That's correct.
So, David,
but it's the property owner that's making the assessment.
Something about absentee taxes.
Well, to clarify, David, this kind of strategy used in this context wouldn't be for existing developments. You would be looking at, say, an urban expansion area that has a limited number of property owners, where the city's saying, we can't figure out how to finance the infrastructure to make this development happen, which is maybe what happened in Kaiser Station. Do you guys want to self-finance it through local improvement district? And in some instances, developers have looked at that and said, yeah, I can figure out how to pencil this out and make it work. So this wouldn't be something the city would go in and impose on a bunch of property owners and say, we're going to upgrade your infrastructure regardless of what you want.
The property owners could put that in.
And so, again, I think the idea here is to provide funding for infrastructure where infrastructure finances have been a struggle for the development areas.
Or just evaluating it?
All right, other comments on strategy board?
There's not 4.3 in the construction tax. I didn't get a feel for how much that would. If somebody's building a $250,000 home, what kind of tax are we looking at? I just throw from examples around the state.
Half out of 1%.
1%?
Well, that's not what we're saying that we would do.
No, we're just
saying a bigger one to 1%. Presumably, if the city pursued this approach, you would look at what the revenue generating capacity is based on assumptions about the amount of building permits that are going to be issued. And council would want to add some structure to how those funds would be used. Right? So it's not just a fund that's sitting there, it's a fund that has a specific purpose and there are specific kinds of activities that will qualify.
And that was a component that was missing. In almost all of that, we have these financing options that would generate funds for affordable housing, would support affordable housing, but nowhere did I ever see a mechanism that would really affect affordable housing. So,
in this instance, you know, the tax would presumably go into a fund, and the city could use the fund to purchase land, for example, or to offset SBC costs. To do public-private partnerships, there's a lot of flexibility in that mind, so, which is why we're getting into specifics. Yes?
The construction tax, now that you were talking about our direct also, is that over and above the development fees?
Yes.
I have to point out, can you? Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of that? I didn't understand that.
To generate an additional fund that is specifically dedicated for affordable housing.
After 15% goes to the state.
Yeah. The system development fees are restricted on how they can be spent. And the purpose of this was to generate some income, for example, to help low-income housing. But system development fees can't be used for that. So you have to have a different source. The guy paying it won't know the difference.
Yeah, he won't.
Well, I mean, he'll know the difference. I mean, it's going to look like tax in both ways. Once
is that a one-time tax?
Yes.
Maybe it's on the construction side.
Okay. It's on the permit. Yeah, they're not permitting construction.
The land and the building.
On residential and uncapped. Uncapped on commercial.
Yeah, presumably with the applicant for building permit, the assessment, the tax.
you know, presumably the cost of that would be passed on to whoever the purchaser was. Alright, committee. Any other discussion?
Give us an example of 4.5.
Considered partnerships, so that could be working with Marion County Housing Authority to work, for example, if say the city had a surplus parcel that it wanted to work with and develop as an affordable housing development. So you would partner with a nonprofit partner to facilitate that.
Does the city of Kaiser have anybody working in the general area of housing support? Like Salem does?
The entirety of our community, well, not the entirety, almost the entirety of our community development department is here in this room. It's me and Nate. We have an assistant planner, Nina, and then we have a building permit specialist and a code enforcement officer. So, you know, we do not have a housing authority in Kaiser. We do not have an economic development commission. We do not have a housing person, but we are part of the home consortium with Salem. And so that's one of the ways that folks who are living in Kaiser are able to access those federal dollars for Section 8 housing and things like that. So that's something that part of this action item is to also continue doing those things. So, yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How's everybody feeling? What made your
talking about right? It's property taxes.
So where are we?
I think we're at the point where you guys deliberate and maybe make a motion, or
are we reading one by one, or do we need to say all in that?
Well, you can make motions to amend things here too. If anything that the committee's not comfortable with, that would be a good time to identify it.
So, Bob, you might want to point out that we are going to ask the group the question of the UGB and the three options. And it's just going to be a very simple text and answer to a number or go online. But probably texting would be great. So hopefully everybody has a phone or an access to a phone. But so we are going to ask that specific question of the entire group.
How much of the group is missing that we need to go on?
You're talking about the committee?
Yeah.
There's two. There's two. Just
so we couldn't do it orally right now?
Well, I guess one of the questions would be, do you want to hear from the public before you do that? Okay. And that's what the committee's choice is.
Can we do that? Well, how does that process work? Say if we give you folks up here an hour to talk and you vote and you're done.
Well, presumably we want to get input from the group, and so I think the way that works is people either have the opportunity to ask questions, we've had a number of questions from the audience, or they basically provide their input on whichever element of this they want to provide input on.
Motion, the chair.
Do you have a motion?
You bet. I move that we open it up to the floor for discussion on these matters.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
So moved.
You guys want to take a break so we can get set up to do the next part of this? So it makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Maybe we'll wait 2 minutes. A quick reset.
Restrooms are around the corner if you want to use them.
Yeah. The lemon, Mayor Clark. Happy. Hey, Happy.
Oh.
No.
No.
You need to join.
Does anybody else not sign the sign-in sheet?
Yeah, we probably left some. So, as I understand it, I was out of the room. The committee moved and authorized that we would then move to the public testimony portion of the open house. And that after that, then the committee will resume their deliberation on those action items or other items of importance on the study. Did I understand that correctly? Okay.
We have a time limit.
Thank you. Yes, given the fact that this is obviously an important issue to many people, we have to be very sensitive on our time. So there will be, when you give public testimony, there will be a 3-minute time limit on you. So try to organize your thoughts and make sure that you get your salient points right there on the table. Because at some point, I think we're going to lose people out of whatever. So, with that, I think then I will turn it back over to Bob. And he's going to give basically just a very brief recap of what this process has been, what those action items are that we have been hearing about, that the committee has been hearing about. And I know it's, I apologize that the time schedule got blended and mixed, but we really appreciate your indulgence here, and your input is absolutely vital. So, Bob, give us a very brief synopsis of what's happened, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, so Nate said there were a few people here that might not have been in the first part, so bear with us for a moment. Thanks everybody for coming out this evening. It's great to see that people care enough about their community to come and engage in these things. You're not always the most exciting, although the first part of the meeting I did say it was the most exciting thing that you could possibly do.
And just out of clarification, I said it wasn't the most glamorous. I didn't say it wasn't exciting.
Okay.
That's very important.
All right, so I'm going to try and keep the overview of this to less than 10 minutes. I want to talk a little bit about the housing needs analysis conclusions, and then just to sort of give a recap on the strategy. And then we're going to go and do a little bit of an electronic poll exercise here to see how people feel about the UGB question. So we're here at Open House 2 on May 29th. So there were two parts of the study, actually three parts, both the lands inventory, the housing needs analysis, and the strategy that came out of that. So the first part of this was to do a land inventory. And basically what we did was we looked at everything within the Kaiser portion of the Salem Kaiser River growth boundary and inventory all of the vacant land that was zoned or designated for resident use, including certain commercial uses. And our conclusion of this is that Kaiser has 253 buildable residential acres. Some of these acres are in lots that are completely vacant. A lot of them, like all of these riverfront properties, have houses on them and are partially vacant, but we use a methodology that basically said a plots are over a certain size and don't have a developable remainder. The conclusion of this is the city doesn't really have that much land, as we'll see as we get into the need part of it. So the next part of this was how much housing does Kaiser need for the next 20 years to accommodate population growth? Well, basically, we went through a series of conversations with the committee, and we divided this into single-family, attached, detached, and multi-family housing. 63% of the housing is assumed to be single-family, detached, 10% attached, and 27% multi-family. And so the city has a need for about 4,000 units over the next 20 years, or 200 units a year. And the city hasn't come anywhere close to producing that number of units in the recent past. The next piece of this, what we look at, is how do we need by income, right? So the goal 10 basically says the city needs to plan for housing for households at all income levels. So we begin to look at this, and this basically is how many new households will be at each income level. And then the households that we start getting concerned about are households that have low and very low income, so households that have less than 50% of the median income for the area. Those are the households that are going to find getting affordable housing most challenging in the community. When we get down into extremely low income, our observation is that the private sector can't build housing that's affordable to these households. And so they're going to get government subsidies, and they're going to be what's called phosphor, end up paying more than 30% of their income for housing. So a couple of conclusions of this, Kaiser doesn't have enough land to accommodate housing for the next 20 years. We calculated Kaiser can accommodate about 1,360 units on vacant land, but needs 3,610 units or has a 2,248 unit deficit, or we convert that into acres, about 480 acres. And so a few things about this. This is based on a population forecast, a Salem Kaiser population forecast. It doesn't have a Kaiser specific figure to it. So we made an assumption after we consulted with staff and with staff in the city of Salem that the amount of population that Kaiser would plan for in this study was the same percentage population that it has now, the region 15.6%. If Kaiser gets a specific population forecast, that number could be different. Okay, so recap on the housing strategy. Worked with this committee over the course of several meetings to identify strategic priorities. The priorities came out of the technical analysis. Those then got translated into goals and into a set of actions. Again, the actions are not things that this committee is going to make decisions on. They're basically referring these on to council to then go through a separate process that in most instances do additional work, evaluate whether or not these are appropriate, what kind of impact they would have, and then what kind of the specifics that how they would be implemented. Four strategic priorities: provide an adequate and available supply of land for residential use, and we'll come back to that in a minute. Encourage a broader mix of housing. What we saw in the data was that lots of single-family detached housing is being built, a little less single-family attached or multi-family. Identify strategies to support affordable housing and evaluate funding tools to support residential development. One of the key pieces of direction that the committee gave to us as we went through the process of developing the strategy was look at things that will allow or encourage but not require certain types of housing. In other words, the approach in Kaiser seems to historically have been not to regulate things into existence, but to allow or incentivize activities. So first goals around housing, land for housing, went through these in detail in the first part of the meeting with the committee. Evaluate the risks of an urban growth boundary amendment. There's three options there. We'll come back to that in just a minute. Evaluate opportunities to increase residential density, so this would be allowing smaller lots or increasing the allowable height, say, in multifamily zones. There's a number of different ways the city could increase opportunities for density. Second one is encourage broader diversity of housing types. First action is around what we call missing middle houses for housing. This sort of encourage a broader diversity of housing types within single family, move into the residential zone. And again, this wouldn't necessarily be applied across the board throughout the city. That's a policy decision that we need to do that in through Planning Commission Council, but it might be good in certain areas. Action 2.2 is develop tiny home standards. There was considerable discussion in the committee about tiny homes and those as a potential option for certain households. The third goal is around promoting lower cost housing. We're focused on low and middle income housing and workers, or what we call workforce housing. First one is evaluate reduced parking requirements. Second one is preserve the existing supply of manufactured housing parks. And the third one is to consider continuing parking with the same and the third housing program is developing in both develop and preserve affordable housing in Kaiser. And then the last goal is to explore creative ways to support affordable housing infrastructure development. Five actions under this, action 4.1 and 4.3 end up being actions that the city might not want to strongly pursue if it doesn't pursue an urban growth boundary amendment. Creative system development, charge financing opportunities, 4.2 evaluate creation of a urban renewal district that focuses at least in part on housing. Evaluate imposing a construction excise tax to create a dedicated pool of money for affordable housing. Evaluate implementation of a local improvement district program. I had considerable discussion about it. It does not be appropriate again. It was approved by property owners. It was typically looked at as a strategy to bridge infrastructure financing and expansion areas where new housing would be built rather than existing neighborhoods. And then partnerships to pursue grants or loans. So those are the top level funding tools. And what we wanted to do to start in this next part of the conversation was an online poll. And so if you've got a cell phone, so this is where you got an input. Now, I got to say, this is just a broad blanket A, B, or C. And if this were a scientific study, we'd want to know exactly who you are and what your background is, what your understanding of the issue is, and there would have been at least 14 questions on all A, B, and C. So
I'm going to provide a lot of little context on these, right, while you're looking at these. So option one is to expand the project portion of the UGB to meet the funding needs. It's complicated, requires multiple steps. The first step would be for each city to establish an independent UGB. And then the city would have to go through a set of pretty involved and expensive technical studies to move forward with that process. Then it would have to go through a process called an alternatives analysis, and many of these steps are potential for legal challenges. Option two is to use the established San Juan Cosme UGB to meet the 20-year needs, so that would be basically a coordination effort with the city of San Juan. Option three would be to pursue a combination of those two options. So again, on cell phone, the 37607 is the number, X500 is input code, it's
connected to
the letter of your preferred choice.
Yep. What's the number again?
37607. So B is the option two, B is the utilize the existing UGB through that process and the work that has been carried. A is just simply get a divorce and expand the UGB.
You didn't elaborate much on how to work that it would take.
A lot.
More than the other option?
Yeah, considerably more. It would be very expensive. I would say probably $1 million in staffing consulting fees and for option A.
No, what about option B?
Option B would really be contingent on how the city would, I guess, the receptivity of the city of Salem. But my thinking is that's something that council could direct staff to initiate, and there would be a series of discussions that would unfold.
They work with them now, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nate, do you want to walk us through this then?
Open in the text. Open your text app. Okay.
Messaging.
Go like you're sending a text. Mm-hmm. And in the two line, put 37607.
Oh. Okay.
That's your recipient.
No, this is either or. So either. Either you go to, you can do it either online, or you can just text.
And you have to join the session
first. If you go online.
Okay. Then your message from Kaiser.
Yes.
Can I take a picture of that? Is that fine? Is that a question? Feel my phone in the window.
That's funny.
Yes.
There's no more. Anybody still having issues or problems?
Yeah.
Okay. David, remember that.
Anybody else have any issues or problems?
The issues are growing. Nate's doing psychoanalysis.
No, we have no keepers. No, they're not. In fact, they leave like 4 or 4:30. So when I was setting up for this meeting, I thought, we're not waiting until 5 because we'll not be here. And I was glad I did because I hooked up the wires, and that big wire said, told me to put it in the top corner because it said that was it, VGA wire. Okay, so I put it there, and nothing happened.
Oh, no.
Nothing. So I thought, well, I got the IT guy, and he couldn't get it through either. And I said, well, maybe we put it in this other port, even though it doesn't say it's VGA. Sure enough, it worked.
All right. Everybody had a chance to provide their input. I think
Nate's still working on that.
All right, so who wants to? How many of you want to provide testimony?
It's just a sign of sheet of who's here. It's not who wants to testify.
Oh. So can we just get a quick check on how many people want to say something? John wants to say something. Yes. Okay. Well, folks are voting. Are we okay starting to listen to people's comments?
Yep.
I'm going to sit down and listen.
Is it out of this now, or is this the only question?
Yes, this is the only question.
Oh. Oh.
Just keep it simple. It's the big question. Okay. I don't know if you want to stand up or have it on the camera.
Bob Cuborn, resident of Kaiser. I've been here for 15 years. Moved down here because I like Kaiser. My wife is already here. I thank the committee for taking the time to allow us to have some input. I voted for option B. I think I drive out, and my meals and wheels route out in South Salem. I've seen the building. They've got tons of land out there. I'm happy that we do share the urban growth boundary with them. I think that's a good resolution for this problem. At the same time, it's going to keep my taxes in decent base. That's why I moved here in the first place. I love that. Thank you.
And just to clarify, if you have comments on other parts of the strategy, feel free to share at this point too.
Right now, at this point, it's just strategy.
Yes. Well, it can be any part of the site.
Let me jump in. Hi, I'm John Morgan. I've been engaged with Kaiser since 1990. I was the city's community development director through the 1990s, and I'm just two comments. One, to your concern about infrastructure. I did very similar work like this in a number of communities as a consultant, and I'm thinking of the city of Yamhill, which made the conscious choice to infill rather than grow. And very similar to here, we're surrounded by Class 1 soils, a strong ethic that surrounded that, and the community said, we'd much rather work on the infill. And so we put together a bunch of changes in the zoning ordinance to allow higher density housing in a variety of ways, and it's played out pretty well. But infrastructure there came later because the city has a real issue with water availability. And therefore, because the city wants to grow in this way, it's creating a compelling action point for the city to actively pursue more water capacity, which otherwise they wouldn't have done. So the infrastructure followed the expression of desire to grow in that way by infill. And hopefully that offers a little answer to what you said. There's an example of a community that did it that way. Also, I look at the fact that Kaiser is unique in the state of Oregon of being really the only city that legally can say, no, we don't want to grow. In the context of the physical growth of the urban growth boundary, no other city has that capability, except Salem. They can do that and make it all come to Kaiser. But Kaiser can say no. And frankly, for the cost of an urban growth boundary expansion, both in terms of process and in terms of the resultant cost for infrastructure and everything that would go with it, and given the livability we have, you know, I voted B because I just think it's a really rational and great opportunity for this community. I encourage you to consider that.
Yes?
I'm Catherine Lincoln. I've lived in Kaiser for almost 30 years. And I also would encourage you to support option B. I think that with the whole urban growth boundary, we do have enough opportunity in that space for the houses that we need. But one thing that I'm concerned about is I don't want us to think that Salem's going to absorb all the affordable housing, the low income housing, because we need affordable housing here at Kaiser. We have a family friend who's a teacher. He graduated from McNary. He went to college. He's been teaching now for 2 years at Whitaker. He can't afford decent housing in Kaiser. He really wants to live. So we really need to do everything we can to make housing affordable and take our kids and our older people and our service workers to be able to afford to live.
I'm Jim Jacks. We have lived in Kaiser since 1983, and I'm a professional planner like John is. The overarching thought that I would like to convey is, even though we're talking land use planning, ultimately it is a fiscal decision, and with measures 5 and 50, which you may not remember from the 1990s, those are the measures that limited property taxes and limited the amount of increase in property taxes. So the city generally is living on a set of rules that says people's property taxes cannot increase year to year more than 3%. And then they look at their expenses, and the cost of doing business for local government is probably not 3% or less. It's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8% per year. So whatever the decision is, A, B, or C, I would strongly recommend you consider ensuring that new development can occur in Kaiser to add assessed value, which then results in property taxes being paid so that the city can have more money in its general fund to do things like pay for police, which has been a big issue in the city for 20 years now, probably. So think about the fiscal impact of what you're doing, not just the density impact or the land use planning or the transportation or the sewer and water impact. Thank you.
Yes?
I'm going to be the devil's advocate to you. Jim and I both served on the planning commission, and I've lived here since 1973. I've lived here since 1973, and I've taken the time to have a face-to-face meeting with the finance director, as well as two other department heads, just to talk about, you know, this 3% that is a somewhat punishing amount, somewhat made up for by fees, but nonetheless, what I was told was that we have the infrastructure, we have the water, we have the sewer, we have all those things. But if we maintain the size of the envelope as it is now, the footprint that we have now, and grow by some zoning changes perhaps, as well as increasing density in different manners, that 3%, if that's what we're talking about, will actually go further because there's going to be less blocks, miles, whatever, of roads, of water lines, of sewer lines, and all the other infrastructure items. And there may be a change in number of police officers, but they're even going to have quicker response time, as will the Kaiser Fire District, supplemented by Marion County, within our city limits. So in a way, it might enhance some safety avenues as well. That's it.
Yes. My name is Mike. I've been a co-member of the Planning Commission here with Gary for 2 years now, and I've worked with Jim too. I think both of what they're saying is actually more together than what Gary was saying, but I think the reason why I asked for it to be is because it not only do we not have the expansion costs, but it gives us an opportunity to look at the lying and through. In my opinion, parking is one of those things we're lying through. Right now, we have about 50% of the land base on River Road, Cherry's, parking. So, opportunities to convert that into commercial space, housing, basically places for people to live and work.
Anybody else want to make comments? No, take comments from the public.
We moved here 3 years ago, so we're in the movie in the room here, I guess. One of the reasons we moved here is because we like the size of the town. I like how we get around. I like how I can drive up to the store, to the dock, to the lawyer, or whatever. I can park in front of this office, and I can do my business. I don't have to stand out in the rain for an hour, wait for the bus to come, travel downtown, go to a parking lot someplace with a bus lets you off, walk 3 blocks to where I want to go, pack my dark my groceries home in 3 bags, and sit on a bus and go home again. We like this town the way it is. If I was to vote, B would probably look my best, but I'm not a techie. So I don't know how to do that. It kind of forces you. We're kicking the can down the road, unfortunately. But I don't know what else we're going to do. 20-year needs. I don't like the high rises. I think you're still going to have a problem with infrastructure, especially when I've got my house, I've paid for my sewer and water. Across the road, they put in a 7 or 8 high rises, and all of a sudden they, yeah, the development fees take care of the sewer and infrastructure there, but what if the line in the street is too small? Guess who's paying? I got some real problems with the whole growth factor. If you can leave it there, you might top you out at 50,000 or something like that, but they aren't going to let you go into the farmland. Are they going to change all those rules? Then we're through. I could go on another show.
Just a few thoughts. I've been in Kaiser since 76. We moved here because of the rural feel. My husband could bike out to the treatment plant and the deals torn out there. And it was just, and I've lived here, 40 some years, and it's just a real sense of community. And I hate to see that go away because what I see is growth coming in, this 20-year need is because Portland and coming down the I-5 corridor, we're a lesser expensive place to live than Portland is now. So you get the commuters, I'm not saying the bad people, but that it's become more of a bedroom community where we don't have the people who have a commitment to the community. And volunteerism was real important in Kaiser, and I volunteer a lot, and I just hate already to see that dwindle. Another thing is McFerrin High School. I've been involved with boundary changes for high school and all the schools, and I can tell you everybody wants their kids to go to McFerrin High School in Kaiser, so we expand. We really need to think about that. I would like to see River Road improved with maybe centers for affordable housing, that we could do more with what we have. And we could really make it a lot better than what we have, too. Having a downtown would be nice. Just really doing some more planning. The taxes, I have to have a little bone pick on that. I understand that we're capped at the taxes, but my taxes have not gone down for any time. And the value of houses continue to go up. Just so to say that we're not getting more money, we are taxed at the same rate, but the value of our houses always go up, and we don't get a kickback from the recession hits. So, and if this is going to cost a lot to do this, I'm not willing to pay more taxes to make the city bigger. And I don't want to know what Boeing is, the farmland. I just think we have a commitment to keep the farmland, kind of stewards of the farmland that we've got around. I mean, there might be pockets that we could infill, but I like to eat and I like our farmland. So we're fortunate to live in this area, in Kaiser, particularly.
Yes, sir. I'll say something. My name is Bob Warren, and I voted for B. One person made the comment that by voting for B, we're basically kicking the can down the road as far as needs for residential housing eventually. So in that theory, I would hope that the various entities included in the urban growth boundary could get together and do some strategic thinking and planning to figure out what we're going to do down the road. And I heard in here, which was news to me, that there's a current deficit of high-density residential housing in the urban growth boundary. So that would be an opening to get some discussions going between Salem and Perry County. And I would hope we do that. And from that, we segue into some longer term strategic.
Jerry Grant's lived in Kaiser since about 92. I work in the development community, so I have a little bit different perspective, probably. I've got a couple of different thoughts. I love living in Kaiser. It's a great community, small community. Love working with staff, everybody here. You guys talk about affordable housing and making that a priority. If you don't have the land to develop, people are going to want to continue to move, and all that's going to do is artificially inflate housing prices. So it's going to make it less affordable. Talk about sharing UGB with Salem. A large portion of Salem's undeveloped urban growth area is difficult land to develop. It's steep. It's expensive. That increases the costs for developing that land, which even more artificially inflates housing prices. I voted for A. I think a lot of, you know, A or B, those are the extremes. I think realistically, C is where it has to be. You have to take the incremental steps to expand your urban growth boundary, because it's going to happen. You have to do it. So, yeah, it's $1 million to get there. Maybe that's $1 million over 10 or 15 years, but if it's an incremental step to break that UGB at, I don't know, $100,000, I think you have to do it. Otherwise, it's just symbol for the Kaiser.
Kathy Clark, Mayor, and I was mostly going to listen, but I'd like to point out two things. First of all, thank you to the committee for incredible work. This has been very complicated, and I've just been diving into the latest iteration of the report. So two things to let people know about is Salem is going through a strategic planning process right now. I would encourage you to go to the website. It's Our Salem is what it's called, and I'm representing Kaiser on the committee that's kind of working on this project. Thank you for the point about the developable land, because that was the topic discussion in their last meeting, was that the buildable land, the mini UGB for housing is on 10% or more slopes. And when you're talking about trying to develop something that's bike ride friendly, this area, I feel like this in California. It was great on my property as a kid, I tell you what. We don't talk about homeless. back to the day. The other thing is the piece that is also not being addressed here is our employment plan. So within the same boundary, within the same bounds, and we do have an economic opportunities analysis, I'm encouraged to look at that also, because though we have housing and we're told to reduce our vehicle miles traveled, we have to have a place for people to work. So if we can look at that as well, and as you were thinking about the where and how for people to be able to work and live more closely, that's going to be part of the equation as well. But this is something we're going to think about tomorrow. Thank you.
Would anybody else like to make comments? Going once, going twice. Okay. Committee, would you like to engage in some more discussion?
I guess I would like to hear more from the people who chose A. From what I heard, most people that we heard from chose B. So those who chose A, what are some of the thinking behind that?
Councilor Reed, I can answer some of that.
Okay.
As somebody that lives in Kaiser, I really don't want Salem telling me what to do. And I think by not developing our own urban growth, we're always going to have someone telling us what to do. If we don't expand a little bit and have new homes built, who's going to want to come here to live in a brand new home and overlook whatever they're looking at? Part of the reason that I moved from the home that I was in Kaiser to the home I'm in now in Kaiser is because it was a new home and it was really exciting and beautiful, and it was, I still had the feel of Kaiser, but it was a new home and it was exciting. If we don't build anything new, we don't have that. That's an important thing that we lose. We have to have places to work. We have to have some industrial area in order to have our people employed. Yeah, affordable housing is great, but some of the things that I hear people say, well, we're going to have to go up. Well, up is not affordable. It's very expensive. So there's no easy answers to any of this, but I just don't want to stay in telling me what to do.
I have a question. Somebody said Oregon... Nobody can tell Kaiser what to do or something.
What I want to say is Kaiser is the only city in the state that can make a conscious choice to not expand its urban growth. Because by law, every city has to incrementally expand. Because of our circumstance with Salem, we can choose not to.
I like that.
But the
we're still married to Salem.
Population still needs to be provided for.
Right. Not expanding the boundaries.
That's the state.
Yeah,
requirement.
It says,
break off the UGB down south. We don't want to expand up north and take the beautiful farmland that we all eat off of. And what do we have left?
Yep.
You have to go up. How are you going to provide for the housing for the people? That's supposed to be going to be here in 20 years.
That's a question. I don't know. Maybe some people are more politically active. We have two state representatives locally, and they're the ones that could change the requirement that we grow. And to speak to a couple of gentlemen over here, we don't need to grow. Growth is a philosophical concept that usually has to do with somebody making more money. If Kaiser has a population of 50,000, there's not a logical reason why it can't stay at 50,000 forever. Why does it have to become 100,000? If you're looking at saying, well, you need to become 10,000 every 10 years, you're talking unlimited growth eventually. So why don't you just back off the whole thing? Do you have to grow at all? And the answer is, if the state would allow it, because of our situation and the farmland north of us, and the fact that we're totally surrounded with no growth any other direction, the answer is no, you can stay at 50,000. Okay, maybe, maybe not, depending on what the city council does in terms of incentives, and will you out with everybody end up moving to Salem? Well, right now, most of the people are working in Salem anyway. Because that's not going to change. And you think, and the people we created jobs for in Kaiser were pretty much on the whole low income jobs. So we're creating jobs for the people who can't afford to live in Kaiser. That was the choice we made. But I'm not sure that legally that the state could change the rules and say, yeah, everybody else would say I have to do that if the Kaiser's stuck so they don't have to do it.
Well, they don't have to change the rules for that.
And what I'm saying is they could do all sorts of things. I'm not, I haven't seen where our representative has done anything to help us out. Does anybody else remember Bob Paul? The money only one. I'm glad somebody remembers. Do you remember what he said? Come visit, but don't stop here.
Respond? That state law that we're talking about, of course, is the state planning law, and goal 10 of the state planning program is the housing goal, and the housing rule says, essentially, that every city has to supply a 20-year supply of buildable land based on the need determined by population projections. And that applies in Kaiser, and it applies in landlocked cities like Milwaukee and Gladstone and Wood Village, in the metro area. Even though they physically can't grow their boundaries, they have to explore these infill and densification measures, and are doing that. I'm working with Gladstone right now on that exact kind of point. So the choice to not grow longitudinally with a boundary expansion infers that you're going to grow denser where you are. And I personally still think that that's the best option for a number of reasons that were said here. One is, my experience is that if all of a sudden we had 500 acres of buildable land in Kaiser, it'd be gone like that because of the proximity to the freeway and the commuting patterns in the east. I do a lot of work for Millersburg, and I tell you, that town can't create houses fast enough because of its locational advantages. And Kaiser has the very same advantages, and the 500 acres would disappear in no time. Instead, to take a more thoughtful look to say we don't have to expand the boundary, but we're going to infill and create the kind of housing types that are desirable within the context of what we have now. I mean, I'd love to see a 60-foot or more height limit along River Road, along the entire length, to allow the kind of buildings that we've seen develop on Broadway, on the north side of Salem, because that's housing that's affordable and it's mixed-use buildings. And then cottage clusters, the point you make about we don't want to concentrate all this higher density in one place, but instead to disperse it, the opportunity is there to do that.
and to create assessed valuation by doing it. And Kathy and others are spot on that we need to take that opportunity still to look at that employment thing. If we spend all of the city's time, energy, and money, including citizen time, to just talk about a river boundary expansion, we're taking time away from what we can do to really talk about increasing employment opportunities, increase the quality of life for housing, to create much better commercial districts than we have now, to actually build assessed valuation within the boundaries that we have. I think we've got a great opportunity to do that without being distracted by an urban growth boundary expansion.
Jim? To respond to the scenario of if we were 50,000 and said, yeah, that's enough, let's not grow, again, going back to the fiscal impact to the city, and a result can be bankruptcy, disincorporation, or consolidation into Salem. If you're 50,000 and you decide not to grow, okay, how much additional property tax revenue will be coming in? Yeah, it's limited for each property taxpayer to 3% per year, unless the local voters pass a bond measure that taxes themselves or some additional school or fire district, but that's not the city. So the city would have a small increment each year in property taxes, but again, the expenses to run a city, particularly at 50,000 or even just 38,000, and by the way, we're the 12th or 13th largest city in the state, so we're not a small town. We're way bigger than the vast majority of cities. So as you have a 3% increase in round numbers per year coming to the general fund, and the expenses are 4, 5, 6, 7% per year, well, kind of take a look at how those lines go. The revenue goes up here, the expenses go up like that. Okay, well, you can't keep doing that for very long, and so you end up not hiring, not adding to the police force, or you may have to say, well, we're going to drop a deputy. We just don't have the money. Ultimately, that means bankruptcy for the city. So, leaving the population at a certain level, given the current major 5 and 50 tax laws of the state, is, to me, not the right decision.
I don't want to nominate.
So, again, let's respond. The issues of the UGB expansion are incredibly complex. I think Bob said it more than once in tonight's thing. Whatever decision is made about the urban growth boundary and whether we choose option A, B, or C, it's what comes after the housing needs analysis. And yes, Kathy, we've had long conversations about that employment land and the need that we have to address that. We have addressed it already in some of our other processes. That will be a whole other process. But I just want to make sure that everybody understands that our goal here, our objective, is to try to establish housing policies. It's not about whether we're going to hang up a sign on Kaiser and say, you're welcome to visit, but go home. It is about how are we going to address what is before us in our housing mix, the kinds of housing strategies that we have. For example, and Angela's gone, so I can say this, you're all sworn to secrecy, you'll all stay here, right? Our accessory dwelling unit standard requires occupancy of the main structure. And that is against what the state is recommending. Now that is probably something that's going to be looked at. It's going to be something that we're going to put in context with the policies that come out of here. We've already talked about the parking standards. We've talked about the need for everything from additional transit and transportation options to all of that. Our focus, however, for the committee is to understand the complexities of that A, B, and C, but focus on what you think is a good, solid recommendation to put forward to the council regarding what we're going to do about housing within our control. And I got to tell you, this is the first time that I've ever said, I've ever heard in my life that a 20-year projection is kicking the can down the road. But that is a long road, and I don't know what you, if you remember what Kaiser was like 20 years ago, it ain't nothing like it is now.
Yep.
So the world is going to be different in 20 years. And as a matter of fact, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, but the housing supply is more than a 20-year supply, is what I've heard said and told. So, I mean, yes, I've heard that we need to be smart, we need to be proactive, we need to look forward. 20 years is a long forward look. Yes, we need to be cognizant of it, but I'm not going to lose sleep over what the world is going to be like in 20 years. I can't even tell you what it's going to be like in 5 years, to be honest. An economic projection more than 3 years is useless. So, anyway, so let's try to focus on the tasks that we have in front of us. And John, if you really want to add to it, then you can go for it.
I would add that this is about more than the UGB. Right? It is about your community, and UGB is a huge question. Keep in mind that there's nothing that precludes the city. If the decision is to kick the can down the road right now, or whatever that means, that doesn't mean the city can't come back and look at it at some point, at any point in the future. That option is always open for the city. So part of...
Does that mean this book is not closed for 20 years?
No, well, the strategy is a three-year strategy. So, you know, this is really asking the question of what can the city do now that will begin to move the dial on housing? And so there's some smaller things that can be done, and then there's some really big things like the UGB that are going to require a lot of process. You know, I want to just remind you that those small things make a difference in the grand scheme of things.
Am I correct? What we're going to do here as a group is decide which of these actions, and there's was it 4, 6, 8, 9. There were 10 actions, one of them was the urban growth boundary choice of treatment. We've got 9 other ones. So this is a recommendation away from the planning commission, this city council, which I assume is going to be forwarded to the planning department or whatever. Is that what we're doing?
Yes. So you're making a recommendation.
So all of these things we looked at, action 3.1, whatever it was, like that mean would the city would tell somebody to do it? Look at, evaluate. Because all of these things were, they were actions, but they were actions like, we want you to look at it more closely. We want to look at the density, look at the parking, or whatever, correct? So we just need, so what we're really doing is recommending recommendations that they do so.
This committee does not have the authority to initiate a text amendment.
Right.
That has to come from Planning Commission, Council, or staff.
Right.
So this is being used to try to create a body of information and perspective that we can move forward with.
Can we use that tonight?
I think it's done.
I think it's
done. Nick, do you think we can do it tonight?
Yeah, I think it's done. I mean, what we were going to hope to do with everybody here was to open it up for if anybody had any heartburn about anything in there, right? So, and if not, then we would recommend to move these forward to City Council so City Council could make an educated decision on what they wanted to do based on our recommendations.
So we need to do it at mass or one of the facts. So,
I think we open, my personal opinion is we open it up to see if anybody has any heartburn over anything else in here. And if not, then we move forward. Rather than that going down each one. Right.
Except for the urban growth boundary. I would really like to see it going on there.
As a
committee, what our recommendation would be, this group is recommending it.
If anybody
not want to do that?
I think what David is saying is from the committee, a recommendation on the urban growth boundary.
Yes.
The other poll that we did was a broad context of everybody in attendance. But I think what David is saying, if you choose, you can take a vote on that as the committee itself.
And we could vote that to be on any of them, or all of them?
Yes.
Okay.
Because some people voted A and some people voted B, and I have to get home still.
Does anybody have a problem with doing that tonight, not doing it tonight. I mean, I'm going to listen to something. You don't need to read it over.
So, are you saying, because I want to get in my notes, you want a, what you want is the committee to move a motion to recommend that council refrain from pursuing the urban growth boundary expansion?
No.
Okay.
I got it.
Okay.
We'll try it this way. I make a motion regarding action 1.1 that the committee recommend option 2, which is to... No. Two is to cooperate with Salem. Option two. Okay, everybody?
He is established Salem Kaiser UGB to meet Kaiser Swift.
Right. I make a motion that we recommend that action 1.1, option 2 to the city council.
Second. Okay.
All eyes?
Aye. Is there a discussion? Nate wants discussion.
No.
Nate, remember?
I don't know.
No, John. Discussion.
Yep.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any nays?
Okay.
Thank you.
One. Now, I'm going to make a motion that we talk about later. Is that right, Professor? I make a motion that we recommend 1.2, all the rest of them. That we make those back, and those are recommendations.
All the rest of them.
All the rest of them. 1.2, 2.1, 2.2, 3.1, 3.2, 4.1, 2.3,
4. You can just say all the rest.
All the rest of them. That we... recommend that they
see them
do those recommendations.
Explore the options.
They're all explore and evaluate them. Yeah, we add it.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Yes. I like discussion because I don't even like a couple of them, but they're kind of innocuous. I mean, I don't like the LID things. I don't like some of this stuff. But I can live with it if what we're really doing is saying, Nate, you and whoever else there is, you guys look at this, and I trust you enough that you'll do it in an honorable manner.
Right. I mean, look, guys, we've talked about this for months, right? We put our opinions out there, right? And so I think it's time that we move forward with it, right?
Like
what we put together.
I agree, and I agree with David's statement that, I mean, trust in Shane and Nate to do right. I'm really impressed with staff here, and I think Bob has a heck of a lot of patience. But I just want to on record, I do have a problem with the construction excise tax. I think it's poorly written. 15% goes to the state. It's not capped on industrial developments, so I just, that would be my only exception. I don't like it. But that's just me. But again, you know, I'm not going to remove that from their toolbox, you know, if it's something that they need to work on and play with later on, so. Yeah.
Anybody else? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
You're opposed?
No,
you don't get a vote. Suggestion to our co-chair, that would be, I think it would be useful if the committee so desired to make a motion to accept the findings of the technical report.
Oh, the first
go ahead, David.
I'll make a motion that we accept the conclusion in the, what did you call it?
The findings of it.
The technical report.
The housing needs council.
Second.
All right, do we have a second? Any discussion?
Just only that I've got some things, like if you were reviewing a report, how about this or this? Is it still?
It's still got
form?
Yes.
So we can submit those.
Can we have your email address? or you send it to me.
Send it to me.
With the back of the room.
You text 37606.
Yeah, I know how that works. I'm not going to choice.
All right. Do you need more discussion? No? All in favor?
Good motion.
Whatever you said,
whatever. All right.
Sure was the
yes, she was.
Say that again.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. Carries.
Other business do we have to do tonight, Nate?
I don't know, but I'm tired.
Yes, same.
Do we move to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
You don't even need that. Okay. Or you can just adjourn it.
All right. We're done. We're in such power.
Yeah.
I wish Blaze
was here. I remember the last meeting we did that with Vice Chair. I said, yes.
Oh, wait, yeah.
Oh,
and
the problem
was
last time.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Neither one of you is here.
Yeah. We made James. I think
it
was third. Well, we thought somebody else was there.
Wait, I didn't want to
I'm sorry.